The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. Welcome into yet another edition of Clown Takes. Got another week in the books of some people just really annoying us on Twitter and other platforms, and we're here to vent and talk about it, as always. I'm your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. With me on this episode of Clown Takes, from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, by way of Windham, Maine, is Terry Cushman himself. Terry, how are you?
Doing good. This Clown Takes episode is definitely, it gets the most feedback of all our episodes. And, you know, so it's been fun to do it. And it's not always easy finding the right takes every week to, you know, to come on here and talk about the Red Sox issues that they pertain to. But in these first 2 months of the season, it's definitely been a great addition to our lineup. And we try to have a different show every time, you know, so it's not the four main shows all have different formats. So we're happy to do it. And you can find my Twitter account at CushmanMLB. You can find the podcast account at Bastards_Boston. I have a Facebook, baseball only Facebook page, Terry Talks Sox, and you can find us on Instagram and YouTube as well.
Very good. And if anyone wants to find me, you can find me at Color of the Iris on Twitter. You'll see me frequently interacting with the Bastards account and anything Red Sox related in general. So, and I would say that our clown takes this week, even though people are saying, well, you know, what the hell, guys? They just swept the Rays. Like, they're back in third. They just like leapfrogged them. Things are good. Like, you know, what, do we really have to clown them? Well, this pertains, I think this episode pertains to the present and the future of the Red Sox, both pretty important aspects of it too. So definitely worth getting into, and I won't waste any time. I'll let you take the floor. You are leading us off, so go ahead. Who are you clowning this week, Terry?
So I am clowning Sean McAdam and Chris Cotillo. Now, quick disclaimer here. Normally, I don't like the people I'm clowning. I always look for someone I don't like. If anything they've tweeted is mildly annoying, I'm like, that's my clown. I don't dislike either Cotillo or McAdam. You know, they do their jobs. They do a pretty good job. And, you know, they're important parts of the Red Sox beat corps. But I do have a problem, and unfortunately they're gonna make the show this week. Now, before I get to it, I have to set it up by saying one of our tweets may have spurred their comments. Let's see, I think it was yesterday morning, so that would have been Tuesday. I asked our followers on Twitter. We got a pretty big following, by the way. I think about 18,000 on the Bastards account. I asked them, I said, true or false, the Red Sox ruined Garrett Whitlock by essentially making him a starter. Let me just get the exact tweet. That's going to take me off of their tweet. Let's just be exact. I said, true or false, the Red Sox ruined Garrett Whitlock's career and ignored the sea of red flags on how not to utilize him. So what I'm insinuating there is he shouldn't have been a starter, should have been a reliever. And I would say 80 to 85% of them said true. The Red Sox did ruin him. And then you're going to have the 15% that, you know, not very intelligent. They did say false for whatever reason or another. Now, the Mass Live guys on their Red Sox podcast, the Fenway Rundown, they put out a tweet with a 70-second clip of their show. And the tweet says, Sean McAdam is here to debunk your, quote, Red Sox ruined Garrett Whitlock by starting him, conspiracy theories on a new Fenway Rundown podcast. So that sounds like a shot at us. I mean, they use the same keyword. It was posted, I don't know, hours after my tweet, simply asking our followers if they ruined him. But does that feel like a shot?
It absolutely does. Yeah. I mean, you know, we were the ones who asked the question. We used the word ruined, and they immediately have to come out with the defense. Oh, no. The team? No, they couldn't have possibly been responsible. What are you talking about? So, yeah, it feels a little defensive, you know, a little sensey.
It feels like they're reacting to our tweet. We can't prove anything, but that's what it feels like. And we're giving them credit by mentioning them, you know. So I wish they would have at least, you know, credited us for that, if in fact they got it from us. But so McAdam said, I hope I didn't lose Jason here. Nope, there he is. Had some internet problems last week. But so McAdam basically said there's no evidence that starting him was gonna lead to this. Okay. And I've got to disagree with that. I mean, he's made what, 18 or 20 starts in the last, you know, spanning 3 years, 18 to 20 starts. And he needs Tommy John again, possibly. He's getting a second opinion, but there's no dispute that there is at least a partial tear of his UCL, which is the ligament that they operate on, you know, for Tommy John surgery. So, I mean, he had nerve problems in that elbow last year, which put him on the injured list for, I think, 5 or 6 weeks. I was a little surprised that it was that short, because, I mean, it sounded like a potentially season-ending injury. But here we go. So 2022, 9 starts. As soon as he came back from the injured list, put back into the bullpen, never made another start. Last year, 10 starts. As soon as he came back, strictly bullpen. And then he made 4 starts this year, of which one he left with an injury. Only pitched 18 and one-third innings. So that is 23 starts since having Tommy John. And guess what? He's going to need another elbow-related surgery of some sort. Maybe it's going to be the bracing, the internal bracing option that Lucas Giolito ended up choosing. But the Red Sox broke him. There is no disputing that the Red Sox broke him here. The one season where he had no injuries whatsoever was 2021, when he was one of the best relievers in Major League Baseball. A 1.96 earned run average, a strikeout per 9, just literally a tick under 10, a 9.9 strikeout per 9. He only gave up 6 home runs that entire season. That's borderline elite for a reliever. How can you say there's no evidence here? All of his injuries have been as a starter, and 2 of them have been elbow related. He cannot handle a workload of a starting pitcher. There's no evidence of that. I don't think the New York Yankees miss Garrett Whitlock, unless they're sitting up in their front office thinking, would have been great to have him in our bullpen and only our bullpen. But there's plenty of evidence, And I'm going to take it a step further. Not only is there plenty of evidence, there's plenty of common sense to not start him. I mean, fine, you want to try it in 2022, go ahead. And it was a lower body injury that kept him out. 2023, he's got an elbow problem. I mean, at that point, the writing should have been abundantly clear. Don't mess with it. Leave him in the bullpen.
I mean, you can go back to how you acquired Garrett Whitlock in the first place. You brought it up. The Yankees left him exposed in the Rule 5 draft. The Yankees were like, Red Sox, you want him? You can have him. They let one of their division rivals take a young pitcher out of their system for free, for completely free. So they had already given up on him. And like you said, you know, they probably don't miss him. They may have looked at him and said, yeah, he really projects more of as a reliever. But if he's so determined to be a starter and he's not going to cooperate with us on wanting to be a reliever, then screw it. Put him in the Rule 5 and who cares who takes him? He'll probably not make it. And they were right. So that's annoying to start with, that the Yankees kind of pulled one over on you. But 2021, you're right, like he was dominant out of that bullpen. And the Red Sox were smart with him that year. Because to start, like, he only pitched every 3 days until he really kind of became the closer. Then they started, you know, okay, every other day is fine and whatever. But they were super careful with him. And then all of a sudden it's, hey, let's take our best reliever, let's take our closer and make him a starter. And do you know why the Red Sox had to do that? Because they had no arms coming through their system. There were no reinforcements coming. Ownership didn't want to spend money on free agents. And the GM, who everyone loves to praise, who's, you know, now in St. Louis doing God knows what, was too afraid to trade prospects for frontline starting pitching. So instead he went, you know what we should do? We should make Whitlock a starter. That's what we should do. And you mentioned it. So 2022, he gets hurt. It's a hip injury. Okay, fine. It's a hip injury, a little bit weird. It kind of gave me Clay Buchholz vibes, but fine. I get them sort of saying, well, let's try again because that was a freak injury, probably not going to happen again, whatever. 2023, he hurts his elbow. Right then and there, you should have said, okay, experiment over. We're wrong. He can't start. It's not going to work. You know, go rehab, get better. You're a reliever from now on. They even signed him to a contract that is more of a reliever type of contract than it is a starter one. They signed him early. They locked him up early. And we all said at the times, oh, well, yeah, that makes sense. That's the kind of deal you give a closer that you want, you know, closing games for you the next couple of years. And yet they've continued to try and force him into the rotation. And then they did it again this year. Craig Breslow comes in. I'm like, please be smarter than your predecessors. Please tell me you can see that this guy can't hack it as a starter. And instead, him and Andrew Bailey say, nope. No, put him back in the rotation. We're going to try for a third time now. And he gets hurt again. And you know what? He's probably going to get Tommy John. It's probably going to be that. I don't know if it's going to be the brace or whatever, but he's at least out for the rest of this year, I'm guessing, and probably well into next year. So you've wasted so much of this guy's career because you just are insistent on him being a starter. And you didn't have to this year. You really didn't have to, even though you have no organizational depth. You have five viable starters right now. We were talking about Cooper Criswell on the last show. He's actually proven that, yeah, he can be a solid number five. So you didn't even have to do it this year, and they still forced it. It just makes no sense to me. And a guy that you got for free, who, as I described him in the past, has found money, you've now screwed up. You've wrecked him. And for Fenway Rundown, a team-supported podcast, would say, oh, no, they didn't ruin him. You're all wrong. How? Like, how could that possibly be wrong? What, so it's a complete coincidence that because they're forcing him to throw, you know, 90-plus pitches every 5 days as opposed to just putting him in the bullpen, like, it's just a coincidence that he got hurt? No. It's clearly because he can't hold up as a starter. It's too much torque on his arm and on the rest of his body, and they screwed him up. It happens. It's happened for years. You know, look at what the Yankees did to Jabba Chamberlain. They did the same thing to that guy. He was a dynamite reliever out of their bullpen. They're like, you know what? We want him to be a starter. And his career blew up. He could not hack it as a starter. They wrecked him too. So it's like, teams do this. You're not the only ones to do it. The Red Sox aren't the first. They won't be the last. The Rays break pitchers all the time. But you don't want to have that reputation as an organization. And you really can't afford to be doing that when, again, you have no pitching coming through your system. Zero. None. Your best pitching prospect right now is probably in single A somewhere, because all the other guys, like Brian Mata, is not going to make it because he keeps getting hurt too. Everyone was, you know, shoving Shane Drohan down our throats 2 years ago. That guy sucks. He's not even with the organization anymore. He's gone. So you have no pitching. You keep drafting shortstops and you have no pitching coming through your system. And you just broke one of your young guys who you have signed for multiple years. It's just like they completely screwed it up. They screwed it up from day one. As soon as he had that 2021 season, they should have said, you know what? It'd be great if he was a starter, but let's not look a gift horse in the mouth. He's a phenomenal reliever. Let's keep it that way. Let's play it safe. This guy has an injury history. He's dominant out of the back end of that bullpen. Let's just take it for what it is, and let's keep him as a reliever. And they couldn't help themselves because they thought they were smarter than everyone else. And I'm sure there was some stupid analytics that told them that he could be a starter, and it didn't work. So, you know what, Red Sox, you get what you deserve. And I feel bad for Whitlock. He's been through a lot. We know about, you know, the off the field stuff. You know, you look at what he did in 2021, you wish you could have that back, but, and a little bit's on him too, but how can you blame him? Every guy wants to be a starter. Every pitcher wants to be the next, you know, Max Scherzer, or, you know, the next whatever, Glavin, Maddox, all those guys. Like, they all want to be starters. But at some point, you have to step in and say, you're not going to make it as a starter. You're so much better as a reliever. Take it for what it is and run with it. And they didn't do it. They got in the way. They screwed him up. And, yes, I do put it on the Red Sox. I 100% put it on the Red Sox front office and whoever, whatever nerds are running their analytics team that said he can be a starter. They ruined his career, period.
You sort of did touch on it, but I'll dive deeper into it. This is a product of the Red Sox not doing their job this winter to build that rotation, despite having the money and flexibility to do it. They were well under the luxury tax. They could have went out and got some mid-level guys, but, you know, if not the Jordan Montgomerys, I mean, you could have given Seth Lugo that 3-year deal that the Royals given him, and he's the ace of their staff essentially right now. Well, Cole Reagans probably is, but he would be the ace of some team staffs, and they didn't do it. They didn't do an adequate enough job filling out this rotation. And I'm not even going to give him credit for Cooper Criswell, because that dude wasn't a starter previously. He's pitching fine now. We got into it on the last episode. He's never pitched more than 33 innings in a major league season. So it's far-fetched that he's going to give you 150 innings this year. If the Red Sox, I mean, it's their tough luck that Giolito went down, but you bring in one more guy and it would have been really easy to put Whitlock in the bullpen. So not only did they not do their job last year by building a solid rotation, a durable one, and one that'll get you through the season, but this was the most predictable Tommy John surgery of all time, outside of perhaps Chris Sale. Like, you were gonna ruin his elbow again if you trotted him out there. And after just 23 starts, you've already blown it out. That's not even a full season. 23 starts is not even a full season. How many innings is that? Let's see. That's about 150, 170 innings from 2022 forward. And I say 2022 forward because those were the years he was going to be a starter. That's all you got out of him. And if he has the bracing procedure, he could be ready conceivably by next opening day, especially if they're going to be smart with him and make him a starter. If he needs full on Tommy John, at best, you might get him at the tail end of next year out of the bullpen. That's all you're getting. He's got, let's see, two more guaranteed years left. 2025, he's set to make $5.5 million. He'll make $7.5 million in 2026. And this is guaranteed money, people. It doesn't matter if he pitches or not. He's getting that money no matter what. If they feel so inclined, he does have an $8.5 million option in 2027 and a $10.5 million team option in 2028. So you could have him for 4 years beyond this, but there's two guaranteed years. And the Red Sox, they made every mistake imaginable when it comes to Garrett Whitlock. They did a bad job building their rotation, so they felt compelled to have to start him, and then they broke him like we've been saying he would. We've been screaming it from the mountaintops on this podcast that they would break him, and then this other very prominent Red Sox podcast comes out and says, no, there's no evidence that was going to happen. That's nuts, man.
It really is. And again, there's so many other things they could have done this offseason. And people will scream at us, go, well, what about Giolito? They signed Giolito and he's never been hurt, you know, or he doesn't have an injury history, blah, blah, blah. Okay. It doesn't mean that Whitlock would have automatically started in the bullpen, because it could have meant that given how his spring went, that they said, well, you know, Cutter Crawford was okay, but maybe he's still not quite ready. You know, they were so determined for Whitlock to be like their number three. They were so determined for that to happen. I don't think it would have mattered if Giolito was healthy. I think your rotation just would have been Bayo, Giolito, Whitlock, Pivetta, and then, you know, Houck. Like, because I don't think they're expecting this out of Tanner Houck, what they're getting right now. So they just were shoehorning him in that because, again, they want to show the world how smart they are. This has been the problem with the Red Sox for years, is that they have this arrogance of, well, our front office, we know what we're doing. You know, we're smarter than the rest of you guys. It's why, like, when you and I sit on here and we say, how come they won't draft pitching? And all these baby Red Sox fans go, well, look how it's worked out the last couple of years with Jack Leiter and all those guys. They all get hurt. You don't draft for pitching. It's too risky. You got to do it at some point. Like, every pitcher gets into the league somehow, someone drafts them. Instead, the Red Sox take 18 shortstops, and then they take a pitcher in, like, the 19th round who you'll never hear from. Their top pitching prospect right now is something called Wickelman Gonzalez, who's in AA, and his ERA is 5.7. So when I tell you there's no reinforcements coming on the pitching end, I mean it. There is jack squat. Like, literally, the square root of Jack is what they've got in terms of pitching prospects. They have nothing. And then these Red Sox fans will say, well, that's why they draft all these versatile infielders, so that you can trade for pitching. Okay, the last guy wasn't willing to do that. You know, King Haim wouldn't trade any of his precious 18 shortstops. Is Breslow going to do it? If there's a top-line starter available, is Breslow going to trade one of his precious prospects to do it? Or is he going to be gun-shy like Bloom was? This is where the problem lies. Like, if you're not going to pay for them, which ownership doesn't want to do, you're not going to draft them, which the front office doesn't want to do, then you have to trade for them. Are they willing to do that? Because if they're not, then where are you going to get your pitching from? Or are you just going to keep doing this? You're going to keep plucking guys from Rule 5 because they're free, and trying to turn them into starters when they're not. So it just, the Whitlock thing, you're right. It's like, it's a microcosm of a much bigger problem that I have with the Red Sox right now, which is, yes, I hear about all these other guys are developing and we'll get into it. Yes, I hear about all these great hitters. Where's your pitching? Because Nick Pivetta is over 30 years old right now. Luckily for the Red Sox, they've got Crawford, Houck, and Bayo under 30 years old, seemingly in their prime. They lucked out on that one because Andrew Bailey came in and discovered something with Houck and Crawford that I didn't think was there. Brian Bayo, for all of you who hate Dave Dombrowski, you can thank him for that one. He got you Brian Bayo. He got you Tanner Houck, too, I believe, too.
He did.
So, yep, for all of you who love Bloom and hate Dombrowski, you can thank him for Houck and Bayo. So that's great. You lucked into those guys. You can thank Bloom for Pivetta. He did trade for him, but looks like Bailey and Breslow are getting the most out of him. But at some point, you need more pitching in your pipeline. Like, again, if Brian Bayo goes on the IL right now, who's filling into your rotation? I mean, seriously.
Josh Winkowski.
It's either Winkowski or it's Chase Anderson. Like, that's what you're going back to because you don't have a guy in AAA that you can call up and say, you know what, maybe he's not quite ready, but he can at least give us 5-6 innings and let's see if he develops. You don't have that guy. You have no one. So their organizational approach to developing, drafting, scouting, pitching needs to change. The Whitlock thing is kind of like this overbearing, like, they tried too hard with a free guy and it didn't work. Now they need to go to a different plan. And I'm hoping that Breslow is willing to do it. But I have a lot of doubts because, again, he's already been here one off season and I didn't see him do much to address it. We'll see if he does going forward, but they need to change their approach in terms of how they build their organizational pitching because the fact that they have no one right now ready to come up is embarrassing, frankly.
So just, a couple other guys. Richard Fitz right now, he's got a 4.71 ERA. That sounds bad, but that's mostly because he got lit up for 6 earned runs in his last outing on May 17th. So he's up in AAA, and when you're up in AAA, you know, you could be up at the major league level at some point by the end of the season. So we'll see what happens with him. Luis Perales, I have a feeling, might be our top pitching prospect, despite what the rankings say, but he's only in single A. Go ahead.
I will say, at the time of this recording, Perales did just get promoted to AA.
Oh, he did. Like, okay.
Literally tonight. Yeah. So that is a development. That's good. But again, that's just AA. He still has a ways to go.
And he was pitching to a 3.5 ERA in single A. His last time out, I want to say he had 10 or 12 strikeouts. So, I mean, that's nice to see. I mean, you want to have you want to bring up prospects that can strike guys out. And unfortunately, so far in his career, Brian Bayo is not that guy. But we'll see. I just can't. There's nothing nice to say about the Whitlock situation. I was going to say, well, at least we don't have to listen to the is he or isn't he for a little while, but that's not really nice. I mean, in a perfect world, Garrett Whitlock is an important part of your team and he's going to be utilized in the best way possible, and that's not what happened. The Red Sox broke him, and that's too bad.
At this point, you just have to hope that early mid 2025, he's healthy, he comes back, and he's in your bullpen. Just at this point, learn your lesson, put your arrogance to the side, and just get the most out of him that you can and stop trying to break him. Let the guy have a career as a reliever.
And that was 12 strikeouts for Luis Perales in five innings. Walked two, did not give up an earned run. So they promoted him after his most dominant outing.
Yep. Yeah, so he now, as of this recording, is on his way to AA, and he'll be joining some other people down there in AA, which is going to bring me to my clown take. And I'm not going to target anyone specifically. I could, but I'm going to just put it out there as a general Red Sox topic that I've seen, you know, over the course of this season. It's actually been happening for a while. It was in the off season too, but it's the idea or the concept that Marcelo Mayer, Kyle Teal, and Roman Anthony are the Red Sox quote unquote big three. Now, if you want to say they're the big three prospects, no duh. They're literally one, two, and three. So that makes sense. But it's the way that they're being talked about through social media, you know, just Red Sox fans in general of, well, the big three, Mayer, Anthony, Teal, you know, they went off again. That, you know, look at all their batting averages in AA, and well, they had another big night for the big three. They all did this. Okay. They're in AA. Can we like relax a little bit and wait? Because we have no idea about any of these three guys. Like, for them to be labeled your big three, I don't think that's accurate. Your big three should be on your major league roster. No other team in baseball is labeling three guys in their AA system as their big three. Like, the Orioles are saying their big three is like Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, and Grayson Rodriguez. The Yankees' big three is Judge, Soto, and Cole. The Dodgers' big three is Ohtani, Betts, and Yamamoto. Like, and those are sort of the elite teams. But even if you look at just regular teams that you're on the same par with, the Blue Jays, their big three is Guerrero, Bichette, and what, Gausman, right? So, like, your big three should be Devers, Duran, and Houck. You could argue it's Devers, Houck, Crawford. You could argue it's Houck, Duran, Abreu, like whatever combo you want, but it's guys on the big league roster, not three guys in AA. We have no idea if Mayer, Teal, or Anthony are going to work out as major league prospects. And if you don't believe me, just all it takes is go to MLB.com, top prospects, go to the Red Sox page, scroll back a couple of years, start at 2021. Okay, because it seriously, it gets alarming. Like, it's a little bit scary. Your number one prospect in 2021 was Tristan Casas. Okay, makes sense. He seems to have worked out. You know who number two was? You guess who number two was?
Don't say it was Bobby Dalbec.
Close. He was number three.
Brian Mata.
Nope. Your number two prospect in 2021 was Jeter Downs. Who cannot play. You were close on Mata too. He was your number five prospect that year. And then, I mean, just keep going back. You'll see names that don't make sense. Who do you think was the Red Sox number one prospect in 2019? And I'll give you a hint. It was not Tristan Casas. He was number two.
In 2019.
Another guy who was no longer with the team.
Tell me.
Michael Chavis.
Oh.
Michael Chavis. And your number three prospect that year was Bobby Dalbec. And rounding it out at four and five were Darwinson Hernandez and Jay Groom. Okay, so for everyone who wants to shove Mayer, Anthony, and Teal down my throat, I would just caution, be careful. They're still in AA. We don't even know if they can hit at AAA. And even then, you don't know that they can hit the major league level. Bobby Dalbec is a AAA superstar. He's the Mark McGwire of AAA. But as soon as he comes up here, he can't hit. Rusney Castillo was a AAA superstar. Couldn't cut it at the big league level. So for people to just keep shoving this whole idea of the big three down my throat, and, oh, well, 2026, the Red Sox are going to be awesome because Mayer's going to be a short. Teal is going to be a catcher. He'll be your Adley Rutschman. Roman Anthony's going to be in your outfield. And, like, it gives them liberty to say, oh, yeah, trade Duran. Trade Willier Abreu. Because we won't have room for those guys anyway. Screw them. Yeah, only two of your best players on the 2024 roster right now. Screw those guys. Trade them because Roman Anthony's on his way. I can't stand that mentality. You're waiting for something that you don't know is going to happen. So, and it's not just like, it's not just one guy who's saying, there's a lot of Red Sox fans who just every day they tweet, oh, another update from the big three. Kyle Teal went 2-for-3 today. Another update from the big three. That's not your big three. You have no idea if they're your big three yet. They might be. I hope they are. That would be ideal if they were. But you don't know that yet. Your big three is on your major league roster. Your team's in third place. They just swept one of the best teams in the American League. Like, can we focus on that? Or do we have to keep watching the Portland Sea Dogs every day and just dreaming of 2026? That does nothing for me. I'd rather focus on the 2024 team right now that's in front of me, because I have no idea if these three guys are going to make it. No idea. And neither do any of you. So that's been bugging me lately.
Remember Matt Wieters?
Oh, yeah. He was supposed to be the Adley Rutschman of his time. Yeah.
Yeah. So that he was a Boris guy, you know, Kyle Teal, Boris guy, similar hype. But I'm confident that all of these guys will be major leaguers, but will they be the perennial all-stars that, you know, some other prominent Red Sox accounts seem to think that they are? And the thing I've mentioned throughout the season is very rarely do they ever come up and make an immediate impact. I mean, we have a record. I think we're two games above 500 at the moment coming into the Brewers series. And if Raffaello was the guy that he was sort of hyped up to be, you're probably two or three wins above where you are right now. I mean, you know, they call it growing pains for a reason. You know, it can be painful early on. And I don't know how all these guys are going to fit. Like I said in the last episode, Chaim Bloom had a lefty fetish. He only targeted lefties, whether it was in the draft or in trades. That's how it worked out. And you can't keep them all. I mean, if you want to go full send on all three of these being a major part of your core, are you ready to trade Tristan Casas to balance out this roster? I mean, that could happen. And I'm not going to lie, the injuries with Casas bother me a little bit. I mean, he does have an injury history. This is his first big one at the major league level. But Devers isn't going anywhere. You got Casas. Nobody wants to trade Jaron Duran. Us mentioning that on this podcast is very unpopular. I'm a big Willier Abreu guy. And if you're hell-bent on keeping Duran and Abreu, you should probably be a little bit open-minded for trading Anthony for the right guy. I don't think you're screwing yourself with that. And I go back and forth on all of this. Who's the most untouchable of the three? Right now, to me, it's Meyer. If you go back 4 months ago, he's probably the guy I'm the most willing to trade. So it changes quick. But you look at this infield defense, he's a great defender. He's a lefty, but it's unrealistic to expect all these guys to make an impact right away. Who was the last prospect who did? You might be seeing it right now with Abreu, albeit unexpectedly. He wasn't nearly as touted. But you have to go back to probably Andrew Benintendi. That's the last time it happened.
And look what happened to him.
Yeah, and that's that could be a curse. That could absolutely be a curse. Mookie Betts was pretty good right away. I wouldn't say he was off the charts. It took his, in his second full season, he was runner-up to Mike Trout. In my opinion, probably should have won the MVP that year. But it's going to be painful, and you're going to lose a lot of games while these guys are trying to figure it out, because most of the time it takes at least 2 or 3 years. Devers was not a stud until his third full season. So...
Even the Orioles went through it. Look what happened to Jackson Holliday. I mean, all the hype around him, like when he made his debut, everyone was like, man, this kid's the real deal. And I think he had like 2 hits in his first 3 weeks, and they already sent him back down. It was too soon. He wasn't ready. And the other scary part is, if let's say all three of those guys make it, right? And they're all what they're hyped up to be. Okay, that's great. There's a foreseeable future where your lineup is all lefties except for Vaughn Grissom. He might be the only righty in your lineup. If Kyle Teal's catching every day and not Connor Wong, then Vaughn Grissom's the only right-hand batter. Because I'm assuming Mayer plays every day at short. I don't know what happens to Trevor Story. Maybe he's your DH, so maybe you have 2 righties. But otherwise, it's all lefties. That's not sustainable. You can't do that. Like, that just doesn't work. I'm sure Joe Maddon would have a field day with that, but I don't know. I don't see that working. So I think at some point they're going to have to start peeling guys off from all these prospects you have and deciding which ones are the real deal and which ones would we rather trade to get, you know, someone else back to balance out the lineup, like you mentioned with Casas. I don't think that he would be the guy, but maybe Roman Anthony isn't always cracked up to be, which, by the way, he's sitting like 260 in AA right now. He's not even like hitting that well. So 232 at the moment. Sitting 232. The guy who's supposedly one of your pillars, one of your big three, is sitting 232 in AA. Maybe he's not the guy. Maybe it's Miguel Blaze, who's right behind him in the prospect rankings, and he's a right-handed hitter who's an outfielder. So maybe Blaze is the better guy. Like, this is my point. Like, there's Red Sox fans are so quick to label these guys the big three. You have no idea yet. You feel pretty good about Mayer. He had the shoulder injury that slowed him down. He seems to be picking it back up again. Kyle Teal has been great ever since they drafted him. And he's a catcher, so that's a, you know, pretty important position. Maybe Anthony's the guy that you go, you sell high. Because he rocketed through the system, too. He was like way down the prospect rankings, and then all of a sudden, you know, all these different publications started ranking him like in their top 10, and he started rocketing up in terms of the rankings. But maybe he's not the guy. Maybe you take advantage of that and ship him in a package for something, and maybe Miguel Blaze is a better prospect. It just, like, Red Sox fans just have to be patient. These guys are in AA. You can't rush it. I already saw someone today saying, oh, there's an outside chance you see Roman Anthony at the end of 2024. What? Are you kidding me? A guy who's hitting 230 in AA right now is going to be ready for the big leagues by August or September? Like, no. No shot. Look at what the Orioles are doing. They're doing it right. Now, they called up Holliday. He wasn't ready. They sent him back down. They've got this kid. I cannot pronounce his name. I feel so bad. I think it's like Hayston Kerstad or something. He's one of their top prospects. He's an outfielder. And he's an older prospect. He's 24. He's been there for a while. And he's mashing right now in the minor leagues. And all the Orioles fans are saying is like, when is he coming up? Like, you know, they don't have room for him. And they're not rushing him. I guess he missed a couple of years because of a heart problem during COVID. Like, they're being patient. They're not rushing everybody up. Rushman came up when he was ready. Gunnar Henderson came up when he was ready. He won Rookie of the Year. You know, Jordan Westberg, who nobody talks about, another prospect of theirs. They didn't wait on, they didn't rush him, waited until he was about 24, called him up. Now he's one of the best hitters in their lineup. You know, for Red Sox fans to say, oh, Roman Anthony should come up by the end of 2024, you're insane. Like, just be patient. It's not going to happen this year, and you don't even know if these kids are going to make it. So it's just, the idea of having to label a big three this quickly, just at least wait till they get to AAA and they're kind of knocking on the door. AA, that doesn't tell me anything. I need to see it at the AAA level first. Like, to me, they have a ways to go.
Yeah, and, you know, we've hammered on the lefty thing. You can't, I mean, let's just number them out right now. Duran, Abreu, Devers, Casas, that's four, and then your big three would make seven. I might be forgetting one in there. But I would say, Red Sox fans, get ready for some trades that are going to make you uncomfortable. And I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be the big three, but there's going to be one or two players dealt that you're not comfortable with. And I've been doing this a long time. So has Jason. I don't have a dog in the fight other than winning. And if we can pull off some great trades and the returns are great, I'm not married to the only player I'd be pissed if we ever traded for him away. And he's got, I think, 2 or 3 years left before the 10-5 rights kick in, is Devers. If you offload Devers, I don't think I can recover from that. You could trade anybody else. And, I'm willing to include Casas in there. I guess I am. A few months ago, I wouldn't have done that. But if as long as we're winning these trades, if we're an organization that wins trades like Tampa has done for so long, like the Mariners kind of do, the Dodgers win trades, the Astros win trades. If that's what we're going to do, then I'm okay with moving some of these guys, especially if it's for pitching.
And that's, I'm glad you brought up if it's for pitching, because the prospect I most lamented the Red Sox ever giving up in my lifetime, and I'm not as old as a lot of other Red Sox fans out there, but when they traded Hanley Ramirez for Beckett and Lowell, I was crushed. Because I knew Hanley was going to be an everyday player. I knew he was going to be great when he came up. I was like, oh, you gave up your future shortstop for Beckett and an aging third baseman? Like, what are you doing? How'd that trade work out? Pretty damn good, I would say.
I would say a top five trade in the last 30 years, if not top two or three.
One of the best they've ever made. And then fast forward, I was a little bit bummed they traded Michael Kopech in the Chris Sale trade. I thought Kopech was going to be a future stud for you. How'd that trade work out? Forgetting the extension, obviously. The Chris Sale extension was a disaster, but
the trade was good.
Dynamite. Kopech is, you know, barely hanging on to a major league career. Yoan Moncada can't stay healthy. So that's, you know, like you said, Red Sox fans need to prepare themselves. A trade like that is likely on the horizon. It doesn't mean you're going to lose a trade. You can make good trades like that. So, and like you said, can't keep all these guys. You can't keep all of them. It's going to get too crowded. You're going to have to make a move.
We'll see. I don't think any of those guys get called up outside of September, because I don't think the service time starts if they do it that way. But I don't expect we're going to be competitive by the time September rolls around. And perhaps at least one of those seven guys I mentioned does get traded. In the last episode, we did talk in depth that perhaps Duran could be on the block. I don't know. The Red Sox would take a big PR hit, but if you're offered something stupid, you got to take it.
Yep. And right now it's not, you know, something to stress about, because it's, you know, May 23rd, whatever the date is. July is right around the corner. Trade deadline's right around the corner. And teams that are in a better position than likely the Red Sox will be in are going to get desperate, and they're going to start calling Craig Breslow. And he's going to get some offers thrown his way for guys like Duran, Abreu, some of those minor leaguers. So get ready, because those rumors are going to start to swirl. And I don't know. I think there's a section of Red Sox fans that are not quite mature enough to handle it just yet. So I think they're going to have a hard time coming up pretty soon. So we'll see how that goes. But with that, we will wrap up this episode of Clown Takes. Enjoy the Milwaukee Brewers series this weekend. The weekend crew will be up with you guys Monday morning to recap that. But everyone have a safe and happy Memorial Day weekend, and we will talk to you all later. Take care.